It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Pennsylvania primary is exactly 3 weeks away. In one of the key races, three Democrats are vying for the right to face incumbent Republican U.S. Senator Pat Toomey in November. Today, we are continuing our series of interviews with the candidates as Katie McGinty joins us in studio. Ms. McGinty has most recently served as Chief of Staff for Pennsylvania Governor Wolf. She was an environmental advisor to President Bill Clinton and later served as Secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection under Governor Rendell. She was also a candidate for Governor of Pennsylvania in 2014. Katie McGinty, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
If you have a comment or question on any issue for the candidate, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH, again, the number 412-246-2002. Katie McGinty, you have a campaign ad running that our listeners, I'm sure, are very familiar with, in which a middle-aged working woman talks about just wanting to be paid a fair wage and how she believes you'll support her cause. Certainly, economic disparity has been a key issue this political season, particularly among Democrats. How will you help boost wages, which have been frighteningly stagnant for many American workers?
Well, Paul, one of the things that I'm very excited about is just last week, President Obama and Vice President Biden endorsed me in this campaign, and specifically saying that I'd be a champion for working families. And we had Vice President Biden here campaigning with us today. First, this is family. Yeah, for me. This isn't a campaign thing. I come from a working family, 10 kids in the family, and my dad was a policeman. My mother, after chasing all 10 of us all day, went off to work at night in a restaurant. So I know what it is about a stretched paycheck and how difficult that can be for families to make ends meet. But we can change it. We can do some common sense things like making sure that we have job training and apprenticeship programs in this country again so that we can put people back to work. We've just had another Amtrak derailment, you know, two lives lost. How about if we put people to work strengthening our infrastructure? We've seen what happened in Flint, Michigan. How about if we put people to work ripping out those old lead pipes? But second, we have to pay people a decent wage. You know, our minimum wage hasn't been raised in real time, in real terms, in a long, long time. We need to make sure anyone working hard in this country is not living in poverty. There's so many people that I meet who are working one really tough job, many of them two and three, and still can't pay the bills. That we can change. And I think it's very important for families that we get on the job of making sure that women who are working hard enjoy equal pay for equal work.
Now, with regard to the minimum wage, does that push, will we see it come more from the federal government? Because there were already states, New York and California, for example, that have their plans for raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. We're seeing it in the private sector as well. And also, if that happens, is it enough? What else has to happen besides simply raising the minimum wage, which has been a long time coming?
Well, I think it's a start, and it is a critically important piece of the equation. You know, when you see economist after economist wondering why it is that our recovery from this recession has been so slow, the predominant conclusion, almost universal conclusion, is because wages have not kept pace. And so if we're going to boost our economy, one of the essential things we have to do is to increase that minimum wage more broadly, move towards a livable wage so that families can sustain themselves. But I think we also have to get back in the business of creating good jobs and good paying jobs. You know, I was speaking about infrastructure. That's one virtuous investment, if you will. Make that investment. Those are good paying jobs, and you're building the platform for future economic growth. The other thing I think we certainly can do, this Commonwealth and many families in this Commonwealth in the Pittsburgh area for generations have been in the business of making stuff. When we have skilled labor and we combine it with our excellence in technology, robotics, nanotechnology, we can recapture markets that we have been losing over the years. One thing I would not do which I think would exacerbate the loss of jobs, is to pursue more of these trade deals that have not been working well for us.
Like the Trans-Pacific trade deal, for example?
You know, even proponents of that trade deal say that it would cost us 50,000 jobs a year. So that, to me, when our biggest need right now is to grow good-paying jobs, we can't go in the direction of a trade deal that even its proponents say would cost us those jobs. But there's so much we can do. Investing back in good schools, giving our kids a good education, again, enabling families to be able to afford college. There are smart market-based things we can do there. How about allowing families to refinance college debt, just like you would refinance your mortgage? That's something I'm for. Unfortunately, Senator Pat Toomey has voted against common sense initiatives like that.
You have been focusing heavily on the problems of concentrated poverty. It's a big problem, but how do you plan to solve that?
Well, it's a multi-pronged strategy, I think, starting again with ensuring that every child, no matter what your zip code, you should have access to a good school and be able to go to a good school. I do think, you know, my own brothers, six brothers, most of them have been skilled tradespeople. My one brother, a X-ray certified welder. There is demand for those kinds of skills. I've been to factories across the Commonwealth where people will tell me, geez, we advertise for a machinist, and we've gotten no replies to our advertisement. We advertised for a receptionist, and we had 400 people apply. If we re-up in giving people the job training that they need, we can, I think, sustain those kinds of new industries that would be themselves family-sustaining industries.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is Katie McGinty, Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, as we continue our series of interviews with the candidates. You can join the conversation with a question at 412-246-2002. Again, the number 412-246-2002 with a comment or question for our guest, Katie McGinty. You once called fracking the secret sauce of economic development. Since leaving the DEP, you have been involved with energy companies in both alternative energy and natural gas, and you have been criticized for that and for receiving campaign donations from the oil and gas industry. Can you clarify your position on fracking, and what do you say to critics on the left who say that you are too close to the oil and gas industry?
Well, first, let's clarify the record. I am proud to have the support of the wind industry and the solar industry. I do not have the support of the drilling and fracking industries. Now, there are individuals in the energy space, yes, who have supported me, but I've been in this arena fighting for a clean energy economy almost my entire career. In fact, the League of Conservation Voters, in endorsing me, and I'm the only candidate that has received the endorsement of the leading environmental groups in this country, specifically called me out as a champion of a clean energy economy, as a person who has, and I have, dedicated much of my career to taking on the climate change challenge, for example. As it relates to fracking, you know, I think we need to have a tough environmental cop on the beat. And even in the early days of the Wolf administration, one of the first things that we did was to reinstate the ban on fracking in state parks and forests, and then almost immediately took the biggest enforcement action against a fracking company, $9 million penalty. We have to have the toughest air, land, and water regulations. We need to make sure they're enforced. We should have a severance tax on the shale gas industry. And these are things that I've been on the front lines fighting for and have been, you know, in the arena taking these issues on.
Your opponents in the race, Joe Sestak and John Fetterman, are both calling for a moratorium on fracking until it can be further regulated. What's your view on this?
Well, first of all, in terms of, I guess, campaign season brings out some changes in position. So actually, these are newfound positions for Congressman Sestak and the mayor. And up until very, very recently, I'd say it was fair to say that in terms of this strategy of making sure we have tough regulations, making sure they're enforced, forced, imposing a severance tax, et cetera, that we would be in agreement. The real difference between us is there's only one of us who's actually, again, been in that arena enforcing those regulations. You know, when I was Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection, we had some of the toughest regulations in the country, for example, on mercury pollution from power plants. I have always been on the forefront of ensuring that we have industries regulated with tough regulations and proper enforcement out in the field.
Certainly, fracking has become less of an issue with less drilling because of the glut of the supply. How do you see the future for fracking? I mean, people are concerned, the people that support it. Will it come back? Should it come back?
Well, I think that as it relates to energy, we have made a mistake in this country for a long time, and that is that we've put all of our eggs in one energy basket, and it's largely been fossil fuels. And that means when those markets go boom, consumers are wind up paying an unnecessarily high cost for energy, and then things go bust and economies can be unsettled that way. That's why I've always been an advocate for energy efficiency and renewable energy. You know, our first strategy should always be energy efficiency. And I'm proud to say that when I was Secretary of Environmental Protection, we were a recognized leader in the country with some of the most innovative policies in the nation in encouraging the reduction in energy use and attracting companies that are in the energy efficiency space to come to the Commonwealth. And similarly, we went from doing next to nothing in renewable energy to, by the end of my tenure, we are literally one of the leading states in the country, 3,000 new jobs in the wind energy industry as well as in solar energy. This is a space that we should be very active in because Pennsylvania has always been a state that knows about energy. We know how to build things. There's a lot of steel that goes into a windmill. And one of the reasons that I was so active in promoting that industry is because it does have so many spin-off, very good jobs that comes with it.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with Katie McGinty. Let's go to Jacob in Pittsburgh with a question. Hi, Jacob. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah. I just wanted to ask Ms. McGinty about taxing on gas extraction and about green energy. Wouldn't it be there's kind of a narrative that natural gas is clean burning energy source, but it's just cleaner than petroleum. And wouldn't it be better to push for green jobs that are more sustainable for the environment and more sustainable in terms of employment in the long term?
Sure. So as I was just mentioning with Vice President Biden here, one of the things he was remembering and celebrating was, again, when I was Secretary of Environmental Protection, we literally became the leading state that President Obama came to, that all of the Democratic leadership in Washington came to because we had attracted some of the biggest companies in the world that make the equipment for wind energy, for solar energy. We were number three in the country in solar and number one in the region in wind energy jobs. So this was a terrific boon for our economy. It was $1 billion in new investment. This is one of my top priorities because it is another way that we can show that it is a myth when people say you have to choose between jobs and the environment. Well, you're just not being creative enough if you come up with that equation. Instead, smart environmental policy drives job creation. And in renewable energy, we haven't even scratched the surface of what we can do there. We can have a thriving industry here, good for the environment and good for the economy.
Jacob, thank you for that phone call. Again, if you want to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call to join our guest, Katie McGinty. candidate for U.S. Senate, Democratic candidate. If you win the primary this month, your opponent in November will be incumbent Pat Toomey, who is among the Republican senators who have refused to consider President Obama's nomination of appeals court judge Merrick Garland for a vacancy on the Supreme Court. Should that vacancy be filled this year? And if so, why?
Well, it most certainly should be. The Constitution is not replete with specific duties of a United States senator, but one of them that is very specifically enumerated is the role to advise and consent when the president makes a judicial nomination. Now, by every account, Judge Garland is more than deserving of a hearing, and it is not actually optional for the Senate. The Constitution says
they seem to think it's an option.
Well, then I think, you know, voters and taxpayers need to think, you know, Senator Toomey, do your job and don't take your paycheck if you're not doing your job. I know my own dad, my goodness, if he didn't show up for work for 365 days, that job would no longer be his. And this is the equivalent of that for the United States Senate. They're essentially refusing now for the better part of what would be a year where this position would go vacant. And this is not an abstract issue. There are issues of incredible consequence before the United States Supreme Court. A woman's right to choose is in the balance. Whether we have one person, one vote is in the balance. Whether labor organizations will be able to organize and collectively bargain. Whether we will have a clean and safe environment is before the United States Supreme Court. Critically important, what should be before the Supreme Court is overturning the case Citizens United that has poured a whole bunch of the secret dark money into politics. And Pat Toomey has an agenda of wanting to keep that dark money coming into his coffers. And I think it's part of the agenda as to why they are hoping. And I guess for Pat Toomey, he's hoping it's a President Trump gets to make that nomination. There's a lot at stake, and it really is unacceptable that our senator is just simply refusing not just any job, but his constitutionally enumerated job.
If the situation were reversed and you were in the Senate and the president was, as you alluded to the possibility of, a Republican in the last year of his term, and he and all the candidates at this point are men on the Republican side, and he wanted his conservative nominee to be considered for a vacancy, would you be willing to do it?
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't mean that anyone rubber stamps a nominee. The point here, and Senator Toomey's not being asked to rubber stamp the president's nominee. The point is that there is a need to advise and consent, and that means the full, fair, effective hearing process should be underway and should get underway so that Judge Garland's record can thoroughly be considered, and then senators can decide whether they are consenting or not consenting. But that's their duty, and that's the duty I would exercise and fulfill. You know, this obstruction is unprecedented. Yeah, you look at Justice Kennedy. Justice Kennedy was considered at this very same time in the last year of a Republican presidential term and was considered and ultimately, obviously, advised, consent, and put in place as a justice of the United States Supreme Court. We have never seen this absolute refusal to consider a nominee.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with Katie McGinty. We have Kathy in White Oak on the line. Hi, Kathy. Welcome.
Hello. I'm a graduate of a college here in the Western Pennsylvania area. I'm $19,000 in debt. I graduated January 15th, 2015, and I cannot find gainful employment. I also got a scholarship. I got a scholarship for paralegal studies, and I also got a scholarship, and I became a horticulturist that did well. And I think the number one issue should be jobs. My student loan of $19,000 has been deferred for 1 year because I cannot find a job. I go to CareerLink 2 to 3 times a week. I tweak my resume, my cover letter. I believe it cost me, I calculate it cost me at least $25. It cost me $25 at $10 an hour to do this. I'm there, as I said, 2 to 3 times a week. I agree. Senator Toomey has never been to McKeesport, I believe. There is no work in Western Pennsylvania. I have an ethnic-sounding last name.
Okay.
And I believe my stuff goes into the trash. Wait a second. And I want to know, this is the number one priority, jobs in West Pennsylvania. We can't send our jobs to China, to Mexico, like we've been doing for years now, and possibly have a
Kathy, I'm sorry. We're running short on time. So your question is, Kathy? She's certainly described a scenario that a lot of people find themselves in. So and essentially what she wants to know is how you can help underemployed unemployed people get jobs.
Yes. So a couple things. First of all, in terms of the issue of the outstanding student debt, you know, there again, we can take an initiative to allow people to refinance expensive student debt. Some families are literally being absolutely crushed under the burden of it. And the fact that Senator Toomey voted against allowing families to refinance that debt, voted against a budget that just recently had tax credits in it so that middle-class families could offset that cost. I mean, I would be more than for all of those things. I would help lead the charge. On the specific issue about jobs, look, as I said, I think we can bring good, advanced, high-tech manufacturing jobs back to this country. Here's one of the things we should not do, though. The big disagreement with Senator Toomey, he moved to kill something called the Ex-Im Bank. It's a tool that enables our manufacturers to have something that resembles a bit of a level playing field with the Chinese and others who so subsidize their industries. When the senator moved to kill the Ex-Im Bank, GE and other employers warned, we're going to lose markets and contracts that we otherwise would have. And I, among others, called on the senator to step down. He didn't. And what we saw is 1,500 jobs lost at the Erie plant of General Electric. We can turn that around, though. Stop with the bad trade deals. Stand up when the Chinese and others are manipulating their currency. Invest back in our own infrastructure. Put people to work in building that infrastructure with roads, bridges, water infrastructure. We see with the Amtrak disaster again, rail infrastructure. These are good-paying jobs that then strengthen our economy to be robust, dynamic, and outcompete everyone else in the world.
If you win, you will be entering a Congress that many say is broken. In the face of opposition from a Republican majority, assuming the GOP maintains that in this election, how do you expect to accomplish the things you've been talking about doing today in the face of staunch opposition?
Well, look, when I was Secretary of Environmental Protection or when I worked in the White House for President Clinton, in both cases, the Congress and or the legislature were Republican-led, but yet I was able to get major pieces of legislation done here, a billion-dollar-plus new initiative in clean water infrastructure, initiatives that put us in the lead in renewable energy. And in Washington, major new piece of legislation, even with Newt Gingrich running the Congress, that offered new protections for safe drinking water. Look, I coming from a big family, the McGinty household was a no-complaint zone. So you learn to work it out. On the other hand, there's some deals you can't make. And one major disagreement I have with Congressman Sestak, for example, he supported and continues to support significantly cutting Social Security and Medicare. That's not the way to balance a budget. You know, those are sacred obligations we have to our seniors who earned those benefits. Let's close some tax loopholes that send our jobs overseas. Let's make those kinds of agreements. But I think there's common ground to be found. And you know what? When it's a nasty argument, take somebody out for a cold beer and you can get to yes.
We're down to about 30 seconds. Political pundits have talked about how Bernie Sanders has moved Hillary Clinton to the left. Has something like that happened to you at all?
Well, first of all, I think that Senator Sanders is raising incredibly important issues, and I think that we on the Democratic side are quite proud of both of our presidential candidates. Look, I would say that it's always been a cardinal rule for me that nobody has a lock on the truth. I always learn every time I talk to a person who has an experience, an idea, an insight, and you bet it would be a pretty dark day any day that I don't get a new idea from some wonderful person.
Katie McGinty is a Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate, joining us live in studio. She's also taking part in a debate tonight on Channel 4, WTAE-TV, sponsored by the League of Women Voters, which again gets underway at 7. Ms. McGinty, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity. Be sure to vote April 26th.
Tomorrow, Governor Tom Wolf joins us. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.